This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Well, much to discuss about what happened at the Capitol yesterday, but we begin with what happened in the wee hours this morning, and that is Joe Biden has been certified by Congress as the next president of the United States, and he will be sworn in on January 20th. Mike Pence, the presiding officer, reopened session after the breach of the Capitol that had resulted in the suspension of the process. Mike Pence reopening it thusly.
We condemn the violence that took place here in the strongest possible terms. We grieve the loss of life in these hallowed halls, as well as the injuries suffered by those who defended our Capitol today. And we will always be grateful to the men and women who stayed at their posts to defend this historic place. To those who wreaked havoc in our Capitol today, you did not win. Violence never wins. Freedom wins. And this is still the people's house.
I love Mike.
So may God bless the lost, the injured, and the heroes forged on this day. May God bless all who serve here and those who protect this place. And may God bless the United States of America. Let's get back to work.
And they got back to work. The session, in terms of the number of objections that were anticipated, was bridged. Turns out it was just going to be Arizona, which was being debated before the unrest and the rioters breached the Capitol,
and then Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And so that those two matters were dispatched, and then Pence finalized the session.
The votes for President of the United States are as follows: Joseph R. Biden Jr. of the state of Delaware has received 306 votes. Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida has received 232 votes. The purpose of the joint session having concluded, pursuant to Senate Concurrent Resolution 1, 117th Congress, the chair declares the joint session dissolved.
312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 646-36, type in DA, then a quick comment. I thought that was a wonderful moment, Dan, for Vice President Pence. He showed he is just rock solid. He's like the rock of Gibraltar. Nothing fazes him. Although, you know, I mean, he took charge. He's the one who called in the National Guard to come to the Capitol yesterday because they were, you know, fearful of their lives. But he maintained composure and got it done. And it's what he couldn't reject the electoral votes. And that's what he did yesterday. He did his job and he filed the Constitution.
And, of course, there has been much criticism of President Trump, the anticipated criticism of him continuing to prosecute his case that the election was stolen, including at the speech he gave at the Save America rally earlier in the day, in the morning. But more so, the criticism directed at his response once violence began, once rioters started climbing scaffolding and the walls and getting into the Capitol. And obviously, by now, virtually everybody, at least who listens to this show, because they pay attention, has seen the pictures, has heard about the woman who was killed, has seen the violent confrontations with individuals that were at that rally. And I say individuals because I understand it's a mixed bag, and we'll get to that. But has seen the violence. And so regardless of where it's coming from, what is the president to say when you see a siege being laid at the Capitol. And this was the video that President Trump released yesterday afternoon.
I know your pain. I know you're hurt. We had an election that was stolen from us. It was a landslide election, and everyone knows it, especially the other side. But you have to go home now. We have to have peace. We have to have law and order. We have to respect our great people in law and order. We don't want anybody hurt. It's a very tough period of time. There's never been a time like this where such a thing happened, where they could take it away from all of us, from me, from you, from our country. This was a fraudulent election. But we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special. You've seen what happens. You see the way others are treated that are so bad and so evil. I know how you feel. But go home and go home in peace.
Was that a sufficient message, and was it delivered in a timely enough manner? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line, because that was the criticism of the president. It's one thing to continue to make his case when things are peaceful in the context of the rally. It's another thing to be a little bit slow to the mount when it comes to reacting to, again, members of Congress having to shelter in place inside the Capitol because people are breaching and engaged in confrontations with police. What is the president to say in that moment?
Right, and CNN saying this morning that during the coup, sources said that he was borderline enthusiastic that they were taking over the Capitol. I don't know about that. I mean, he did tweet out, you know, we respect police. We're of law and order. So please, you know, be respectful. But then he waited an hour and a half before he released that video that we just played. And that's why the pressure is, you know, that he should have come out sooner and said, stop what you're doing, retreat, get back, you know, and don't invade the Capitol. But did he really mean for them to invade the Capitol, to have a coup? And, you know, is that possible?
I don't think there was anything resembling a coup that occurred. I'm in the camp of George Washington law professor Jonathan Turley. What you saw was not so much an insurrection. It was a desecration, a coup. Taking a selfie in Nancy Pelosi's chair is a coup? No. It's ignorant. The violence was ignorant. It was unjustified. But was there some threat that this group of a few hundred people that were running around the Capitol breaking things and taking selfies? And in some cases, reports are saying prayers that they were going to take over the government? No. So there is, of course, the attendant hysteria to what occurred. It's not to say it isn't serious, as I think I'm describing, but the idea that our government was prone to a takeover by somebody or somebodies, please, no.
Well, this is what. Can I just play for you real quick? What CNN is saying? This rhetoric. These are the words that motivated the crowd to, you know, to be chaotic and to storm the Capitol.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them. Because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong.
Is that motivating anybody to go storm the Capitol?
Who are you asking?
I'm asking listeners. I mean, is that... What about you, Dan? Does that motivate you to go storm the Capitol?
Well, not from my position. I wasn't in D.C. We're going to go down to the Capitol and cheer on the proceeding. That's a incitement to violence. No, and considering there were, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people in attendance,
30,000,
and it was a few hundred that decided to engage in illegality. I guess some people most people, the majority of people took the message as one of being peaceful in protest, and a few took the opportunity to behave like barbarians. So I guess what I would say is people have agency.
And four people are dead this morning, 52 arrested, 14 police officers injured. And of the four that are dead, Ashley Bobbitt, you mentioned her before. She was shot unarmed. She was storming, trying to get into the House floor. There was a barricade up, and she was shot. And the other three had medical conditions.
Important to note, this message that was sent to early hours this morning from Dan Scavino, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, after the proceeding was concluded, as you heard from Mike Pence. The statement from President Trump, of course, he can't tweet it out because his Twitter is suspended right now, but Scavino did. Even though I totally disagree with the outcome of the election and the facts bear me out, nevertheless, there will be an orderly transition on January 20th. I've always said we would continue our fight to ensure that only legal votes were counted. While this represents the end of the greatest first term in presidential history, it's only the beginning of our fight to make America great again.
It's the closest thing to a concession speech we've had, even though it's not a concession speech.
tantamount to that. Yeah. Bill and Glen Ellen.
Yeah, this whole talk about Trump, where was Biden for 7 months when Democrat voters were burning and looting cities all across the country? They were beating and murdering Americans, in particular Trump supporters. You know, the Republican Party, they said, give us the House and we'll help pass conservative agenda. We give them the House. Oh, we need the Senate too. We gave them the Senate. We need the presidency. We gave them that. We gave them five justices on the Supreme Court to have one of our Republican justices pass Obamacare around with making it up. And then you have all of these people who know that the Democrats have stated that we are not going to have fair elections anymore because they're going to make 20 million illegal aliens voters. They're going to pack the Senate with four new Democrats.
Yeah, those things are not fait accomplis, Bill. Thanks for the call. Look, I want to focus on what happened yesterday, and let's direct our discussion thusly. But the end of days pronouncements about what a 50-50 Senate with Kamala Harris casting the tie-breaking vote is going to mean, it's much more complicated than that. Just quickly, for example, if Joe Manchin doesn't go along with ending the filibuster, then you're going to need 60 votes to pass any of the things that the radical left wants to pass. By the way, the slimmer majority in the House also presents problems for passing the radical transformational things that the radical left wants to pass. So these things are not written in the stars. And I understand what they want to do, but let's separate what they want to do
from what's going
to
happen.
The base of the Democrat Socialist Party that animates that party from what may come to pass, that there are fights ahead that can derail what the radical left wants to do. Rather than just throwing up our hands and suggesting, all of this is destined to be. It's not. John on the South Side.
Hey, morning, Dan and Amy. I love Trump. I voted for Trump, but he came off so weak and feeble. He was talking about Sleepy Joe throughout this whole election. He sounded like Sleepy Joe. I thought that was Joe Biden's speech, and Joe Biden's speech was a really inspiring speech, even though he stuttered a few times. He instilled more confidence in me than Trump at this point. You guys have a great day.
All right, John. Thanks for the call. Tom in Blue Island.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Whatever, John. Yeah, Biden's the one with the moral superiority. Amy referred to that 16-year-old girl as storming the Capitol. She was standing in a hallway and shocked.
She was trying to go through the door. They had broken the pane of glass in the door, and she's not 16.
So, Amy,
she's an adult. She served 14 years in the Air Force, and she tweeted yesterday or the day before, quote, "Nothing will stop us. They can try and try and try, but the storm is here and is descending upon D.C. in less than 24 hours.
Well, unless the video I saw was wrong, the woman that got shot was standing stationary and falls down. But I don't want to get hung up on that.
Look at my Twitter. You'll see it.
Here's if a young lady had been shot and killed this year, and Amy, I'm assuming you've been to the Capitol.
Yeah,
it is a monstrous place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the idea that this place was overrun with anarcho Trump supporters waving flags is, as usual, overwrought. Were they wrong to do it? Yes. Am I outraged? No, I'm not outraged. If that young lady was a 16-year-old, or whatever you say, 30, if she was shot by a police officer at a Black Lives Matter or an Antifa rally, you would know her name for the rest of her life. You're going to know Kyle Rittenhouse's name for the rest of his life because he's been accused of murder while on the ground under attack, and he shot two people attacking him. And you know what you hear by Mike Scott when he tells the news about it? Antioch teen charged with murder of two quote unquote protesters who were charging them. There's a bald guy, I won't remember his name, in Seattle, who shot and killed point blank an American veteran. Nobody knows his name. He's dead now because he got in a tete-a-tete with a bunch of cops out there, and they were forced to gun him down. Everyone knows Kyle Rittenhouse's name.
All right, Tom, thanks for the call.
Ashley Babbitt is her name.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're talking about confirmation, that certification that Joe Biden will be inaugurated the 46th president of the United States on January 20th. That's going to happen.
Learned at 2:41 this morning. Yep.
In addition to that, of course, violence at the Capitol yesterday, rioters breaching the Capitol, running around, taking selfies, getting in confrontations with police. One woman shot and killed. And again, we don't really know the particulars of what happened, despite there being some video circulating around the internet. It's reported that she was shot by a Capitol Hill police officer. But again, the details there, which hopefully will be forthcoming.
Yeah, they will.
I know we got a lot of people who want to chime in on this, and we'll get to you just momentarily. But I wanted to frame this by something that Jonathan Turley said, the law professor at George Washington University, in his conversation last evening with Martha McCallum on Fox. Turley talking about, you know, what the protesting and the rioting were indicative of, and also suggesting what the Trump response will do in terms of impacting his legacy. First on the protesters and rioters.
And then this happened. And it's chilling for all of us because it shows a crisis of faith. You know, that's what the Constitution is. It's a leap of faith that we take together. The people that scaled the walls, that broke into those bodies, have lost their faith. And the question is, how much of America is now faithless? And that's a serious problem. And you don't attribute that to any one person or any one party. It's a problem for all of us to deal with because the Constitution is valueless if people don't believe in it. And there's clearly a crisis of faith.
I think that's right. Look, we have a crisis of faith in this country, faith in the rule of law, faith in the four corners of our founding documents and the principles that are articulated in those documents. As to President Trump and his response, to some extent, his conduct from November 3rd to present, but particularly yesterday as the violence ensued.
I think this has truly left any legacy that existed in tatters. The president was incredibly reckless today. His rhetoric has been the subject of criticism for 4 years, but today was a particularly low point. There was a presidential moment, but it was a vice presidential moment. It was the moment that Pence had when he sent that letter and defied President Trump. I don't think there's ever been a lower moment for the presidency of the United States. And that's going to take a long time to repair for the office. I don't think it will ever be repaired for President Trump.
Do you think he should be impeached and removed? Should he resign? A lot of people are suggesting that. A lot of people, cabinet members, according to CNN, though, so take it with a grain of salt, are saying that they've begun discussions about invoking the 25th Amendment and having Vice President Pence become president for the next 13 days.
And what do you think that would accomplish?
People are worried that he has the nuclear code, Dan, that he's going to, you know, that he's so unstable because of what happened yesterday. And that was a culmination of 4 years that they're worried that in the next 13 days he might accidentally press the button, which I don't think he's going to do. And the statement that he released, you know, via his spokesperson last night saying that there will be a peaceful transition of power. Do you believe him? Do you think there's going to be any more antics, any more rallies, anything else coming up in the next 13 days?
Oh, we have too many serious things to discuss the suggestion that thermonuclear war is upon us in the next 13 days. So some people say some things. Yeah.
Governor Pritzker wants him to be impeached and removed as president.
I'm sorry. Governor Pritzker,
yeah,
and every other Democrat has wanted him to be impeached and removed on every day since January 20th of 2017. So what's your point?
Well, I'm just saying that he released a statement. Because of today's events, I'm asked that the Illinois State Police and other law enforcement.
Fascinating. I could care less about what unserious people have to say in serious times. And he's another unserious person. So let's use the limited time we have to talk to serious people about serious things, not to talk about unserious people who make unserious statements. Mary and Gurney, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Love you guys. Love your show. Dan, I couldn't agree with you more about serious people and serious times. Every time there's a conservative rally of any type in Washington, D.C., think about the March for Life, for example, and what happened to the Covington Catholic Boys. You know, there's always infiltrators in the crowd. There's always going to be agitators in the crowd. And they know in advance where people are going to end up. And we don't really know who broke into the Capitol, who were pounding on the doors. But I happen to recall a time at the Capitol when people were pounding on doors, and it wasn't conservatives. It was during the Kavanaugh hearing. So I can't wait for the news to come out about what really went down and why there were patriots. But I would imagine that most of the people that were storming the Capitol were probably not conservatives. And also, Amy, I don't know what is up with you this morning, but leading out of the gate with CNN says this and CNN says that, how unserious can you be? And doubling down on it by saying what Pritzker says about this? Come on. There were thousands of people who traveled across the country to have their feelings be heard. People who had been
people who I know were there, yes,
and criticized for 4 years for their duly elected.
But does that justify the violence, Mary?
For 4 years.
I know, I understand.
No, I'm not justifying any violence, Amy, but stop doubling down on what Trump critics say. You are being unserious.
I was reporting the facts that CNN was saying that cabinet members are thinking about invoking the 25th Amendment.
Mary,
CNN doesn't report facts.
Mary, what do you think about what Jonathan Turley said about Trump's legacy after yesterday?
I agree with the first part about what he said. It's really a shame. I don't think he handled it well. But Trump always goes off the cuff with his rhetoric. That's just who he is. And there's a lot of Trump supporters that love him for that. And Jonathan Turley is a liberal.
I know.
And he's always been a never Trumper. So, you know, again, you're coming at me with, you know, never Trumpers say.
We voted for Trump. I mean, it's not that I don't like Trump. It's just that I don't like what transpired yesterday.
Mary, listen. It was a handful of people that did it out of the thousands. You know,
right.
You never saw the cameras turned back at all the people who are still walking to the Capitol, or the people that kept a respectful distance and wanted no part of what other people were doing. And right. We still don't know how many of those people that were standing on the Capitol steps that didn't go into the building, and those that did, how many were infiltrators? We still don't know.
Well, I wanted to bring
Mary.
You and Dan this because Mark Wayne Mullen, congressman from Oklahoma, he put it out point blank that, yes, there were definitely infiltrators, Antifa members.
We've never seen this from Trump supporters before. They've been out there. They've confronted. They've had interactions with Antifa and other groups before. We've had Trump rallies. We've seen them have rallies before. And we've never seen violence. We've never seen this before, not from Trump supporters. And so I wouldn't even call this really protesters. There was agonizers that went into the protesters. I had the opportunity to go and visit with a lot of our men and women that stood guard, that were putting their life on the line to make sure that members and staff gets to go home safe at some point. And they have families, too. And I went down to the triage center, and there might have been 25 or 50 of them, I don't know, but they were bloody and bruised. And one young man, I'm sure, was going to lose his eye. And they were shaken up. And I asked them what happened, and they said there was a group that broke away from the protesters, and they had evil in their eyes. These weren't just your normal protesters. They had evil in their eyes. And there wasn't just one or two or three of them that said that to me. There was multiple ones that I talked to.
Yes, there was definitely infiltrators in the crowd. The one of the pictures that went viral is of these goofballs that,
so
I don't know, look like the cast from Les Mis. One is face paint with a Viking hat with horns on it, and he was tracked back to BLM rallies. A retired military officer telling the Washington Times that the firm XR Vision used its software to do facial recognition of protesters and matched two Philadelphia Antifa members mm-hmm. to two of the men inside the Senate. Paul Sperry, who is a very good investigative journalist for RealClearInvestigations.com, tweeted out yesterday afternoon, former FBI agent on the ground at U.S. Capitol texted me and confirmed that at least one busload of Antifa thugs infiltrated peaceful Trump demonstrators as part of a false Trump flag ops.
Yeah.
So there's no question that is the case. But
and they brought shields. They wore camouflage, pepper spray, batons. This was a planned attack.
Yes.
That's what Antifa does.
Yes. So, as I said, there was no question that there were infiltrators. But there were also Trump supporters who breached the Capitol and were running around and otherwise doing things they shouldn't have been doing. I mean, we know this. The woman who was killed was a Trump supporter. She was inside the Capitol. She shouldn't have been there. I'm not saying that she deserved to be shot, but she shouldn't have been there. I'm just trying to use her as an example to say we know there were also Trump
right.
supporters as a small part of that big crowd that were inside the Capitol.
And Elijah Schaefer, who sat on, you know, one of Nancy Pelosi's staff members' desk with his feet up and the American flag and taking their mail, he's from Arkansas. He's a Trump supporter, male in his 40s. Yeah.
Mike in Union, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, everybody. You know, I can guarantee you there was probably more violence in one part of Chicago yesterday than it was at the Capitol. I'm not condoning any violence or anything like that, but let's make no mistake about what happened. After watching, which I believe was Senator Sass last night, with the attitude of, how dare these people come in and soil our carpets? This is the attitude in D.C. Everybody's throwing a party. Proof of it was, on the news this morning, was the press secretary and social media secretaries of the first lady suddenly resigning. Oh, geez, I think we just upset their social circles in D.C. This is what it's all about. They're happy to see Trump go on both sides, and it's disgusting. You know, I was at 24th in California, and six rounds went off a couple of blocks away from me. Any cops, any outrage? Anybody outraged about the people being shot anywhere else? No, just in D.C. where the elitists really are, and the rest of us can just continue to pay our taxes and shut up and sit down. So, hey, and, you know, and it's unfair, Amy. Nobody should be picking on you. Everybody's upset about what's going on, but you know what? It's a conversation, everybody. Let's not pick on the hosts. You guys have a great day.
You can pick on me.
You can pick on me. Well, here's an example. So my friend who lives in the Netherlands now texted me during all this, Amy, this is blanked up, and you voted for him? I'm disgusted. And I text her back. I said, well, that's very unchristian of you. I'm not that type of person. I don't storm things. I don't steal things from people. I don't break into buildings. But, yes, I voted for him. So stop shaming me because I did that.
Frank in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. I'm Jonathan Turley. I think he's about 25 years late.
his discovery that there's a lot of a lack of faith in the Constitution and in our ruling class. There was a movie years ago, and it's by a lefty, Michael Moore. It was called The Big One. Most people don't know about this movie. And it was about the evisceration of flyover country and the loss of factory jobs and so forth. And I remember seeing this one scene where he went into this small little diner in this small town where he's talking to this woman and this man, asking about who they're going to vote between Clinton and Dole. And she's like, who cares? It doesn't matter. And it's so true. That's been around for 30 years. We've seen our country, much of the country outside of the coast, just gone. And there's so many people who have lack of faith now in our institutions and in you know, our politicians and our elites. So he's a bit late.
Thanks for the call, Frank. I mean, you know, something doesn't happen overnight. I would say to that yes, there has been this issue, and now perhaps we're at a crisis point, or we're certainly approaching a crisis point. I don't think it was as pronounced 25 or 30 years ago as it is today, and that's, I think, what Turley is suggesting. Dave in Southwest Michigan.
Hey, guys. Yeah, a little off topic, but one thing that concerns me, 4 years ago when Trump ran, I think we all can remember, he mentioned term limits. And once he got in office, and even his last run for reelection, he never uttered a word. What part of the deep state pulled him aside after he got elected and told him to keep his mouth shut about term limits? Because we need to get these skeletons out of there after 8 years. These Pelosi's and whatnot that live in that and enrich themselves and get power, it's got to stop. So how do we get it on the ballot so the American people can vote and decide how long we want these snakes in office instead of them being in there as a career? Any comments?
Well, Dave, don't think there's much support for term limits. I mean, there's rhetorical support on the campaign trail for term limits by members of Congress, but there's not any real actual support for term limits among members of Congress.
Yeah, because they have to vote themselves out of office if they do it. So why
right.
can't we put it on the ballot for American people to say?
Well, obviously there's a couple of ways to amend the Constitution. One outside of the Congress, but of course that would involve other politicians and state legislatures. So term limits at the federal level will continue to be something that I think politicians use to engender populist support on the campaign trail. But otherwise, until sort of you change the culture in D.C., they'll bring forward more, frankly, pressing issues in the minds of most Americans than term limits, because what's the problem in D.C., Dave? Term limits, right? Well, 98-99% of people are returned every 2 years or every 6 years when they're up for re-election. And so the voters are saying, no, I want to continue to have the same people representing me in perpetuity. I mean, that's every election is an opportunity to term limit someone, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, exactly. But again, you know, when they get in there forever, and again, we know who they are, they built their little empire of power, and they enrich themselves. And this is, we got a term limit on a president. Why can't we have a term limit on lawmakers?
Thanks,
and why
Dave.
Can't we be the ones that make that decision?
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. Greg in LaGrange.
Hi, good morning, guys. I just have to say, I have to agree with Jonathan Turley to a great extent. I think that Dan, you know me pretty well by now. I just think that Donald Trump had a lot of great ideas. He was just a flawed messenger. He just couldn't message. And he hired the wrong people. He hired the wrong people from November 3rd on to try and fight this fight for him. They were wrong. They were wrong. And they completely just misled and came out with statements that could not be proven. And there are some serious issues here with the other side. Whether it be open borders and illegal immigration and jobs and taxes and the entire sanctuary city thing and the voting problems that we have, there are some serious, serious issues, and we need some serious people to take over. And I don't think that in 2024 we can afford to go with anyone I'm not putting out a name. I'm not going to implicate anybody in the past, even our past president, but we need a messenger. We need strong policy and a messenger. And that's what we need, because otherwise we are in trouble.
All right, thanks.
Well, and Dan, don't you think President Trump, I mean, he led people on to believe that, oh, on January 6th, this is going to be overturned and Mike Pence is going to save us. When, you know, if you read the Constitution and you knew this normally takes 30 minutes to do. You just count the votes and you're done. So, I mean, I think that it was misleading that he pumped people up with this bull jive that, you know, everything's going to be better on January 6th and the election's going to be overturned and I'm going to be declared the winner.
Brian in Oak Forest.
Hey, good morning, guys. Mary from Gurnee, a woman, baby.
a woman, yes.
I love you, Amy, but I don't like you quoting CNN. We all know what they brainwash us with. So the reason I called is I'm old enough to remember when the Chicago Tribune called a peaceful protest at Thompson Center a bunch of Nazis. So they've been calling us names, and they've been egging us on, and they've been rubbing it in our face. And I've called and said things like this before. I don't think anybody should be surprised. I don't condone it, obviously, but the way we've been treated the last 4 years, it's not fair. So that's all I got.
Thanks for the call, Brian. Appreciate it. Amen, and a woman on that.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So again, in the early morning hours today, Congress certified the electoral count, and Joe Biden is the winner of the 2020 presidential election, and he will be inaugurated on January 20th. That's the bottom line. But of course, that does not end the discussion, particularly in light of the rioting and the violence that took place within the Capitol itself yesterday. And so this interview that LifeSite News got with one of the individuals who broke into the Capitol, his name is Leo Kelly. And some of what Mr. Kelly had to say, I think, is instructive about the faithless portion of the population, people who have lost faith in the institutions and the animating documents for those institutions. Why did Leo Kelly decide to enter the Capitol knowing it was wrong?
I think I just saw it happen and I was like, there's something going on here. This is a moment in U.S. history that, like, it's not unlike like the days of the beginning of the country. Like, it's just like there at some point there's enough illegal behavior and there's enough crimes against the Constitution being committed by the elected officials that, you know, what are you supposed to do? None of my institutions are working. Yeah. None of this, like, it's just, what am I supposed to do?
What am I supposed to do? What would you tell Leo Kelly? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line, because throughout this interview, and we'll play a couple of more bites from Mr. Kelly, he comes back to that question again and again. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do when I've lost faith in the governing institutions of our free society? What would you tell him?
I would tell him not to storm the Capitol. That's for sure. I mean, you know, but you just got to have, I don't know. I don't know what I would tell them. I mean, people felt a need. They gravitated to Washington, D.C. to support Trump. I know people here that wanted to, you know, walk off their jobs for a day, call in sick, to be there with other people because they feel really bad for Trump. It stinks when you lose, but that's part of life. And you can't have a temper tantrum and you can't start smashing things because your candidate didn't win.
Yeah, I think
but is it deeper than that, though, right?
I think it is bigger than that. I think it's bigger than losing, and Leo Kelly speaks to it.
We appeal to heaven because we, as individuals, we're powerless. You know, we We don't. We've been betrayed by Congress. We've been betrayed by the judicial branch. We've been betrayed by our local governments, our mayors, and everything. Like, I mean, what are we supposed to do?
That's good.
What are we supposed to do?
A lot of people in Illinois feel powerless.
What are we supposed to do?
Powerless for our children.
It's powerlessness is one animating emotion, and the other is betrayal, the feeling of betrayal. He was asked about what he thinks about what happened yesterday, since he was part of it, since he acted inappropriately. I'm saying he's not necessarily saying that, since he broke the law. What does he feel about what happened, what he saw play out yesterday? Listen to this answer.
I'm kind of conflicted because, you know, you violate someone else's space. You know, you force your way into a building. In some ways, that really feels wrong. But whose space is that?
Mm-hmm.
That really does belong to us. And there's, you know, that should only be an absolute last resort. And you know, we'll see how. I mean, I don't know that, you know, maybe we shouldn't have done that. But it's just you come to the end of your rope and you say, what else am I supposed to do? And you get swept up in a movement, and there's a bunch of people running and doing this, and it's just all of a sudden you don't. It's not the logical mind that's working anymore. It's you're just reacting to things, and finally there's a chance that you can be heard and you can have your voice, patriotic voice for the Constitution, for the legitimacy of votes. Like, I mean, finally, there's a chance, and I mean, we took that chance.
Yeah.
What are Americans supposed to do? Like, just no one will even listen to us. None of these people in Congress, none of these people, like, they just don't listen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hello, can you hear me now? Yeah.
I don't think that space belongs to the people. I mean, imagine, Dan, if somebody came in here and started going through your mail, putting their feet up on your desk, then somebody gets killed in your workspace.
Well,
I mean,
one,
like the people's
our
house,
workspace is not taxpayer financed.
Right, that's true.
Number two, that doesn't mean that you, because there's a taxpayer financed institution, it doesn't mean you get to utilize that institution however you see fit. Obviously, that would be a recipe for anarchy. So there's no question. He recognizes what he did was wrong. But the larger question is, what am I supposed to do? Because that is the question of the forgotten man in America. And forgotten man, and I mean black, white, at all. This is not a racial thing. I know.
And the forgotten woman, too. Yeah.
Of course. That's implied.
Amen.
I mean, do we have to do like Nancy Pelosi's rules on this? Yes,
that.
Of course.
There's
the forgotten people in America.
A lot of disenfranchised people in America.
And it's despite the effort by the identitarians to say this is, you know, white grievance because it included some Trump supporters. No, this is the question of the forgotten man. This is the question that bedeviled both political parties that led to Trump's election in 2016. And frankly, despite that victory and despite some of the accomplishments of the Trump administration, I think that question is more pronounced today than it was prior to Trump's election. And I think we, as a country, better try to answer that question in constructively or prepare for more destructive activity like we saw yesterday. What am I supposed to do? What would you tell Leo Kelly? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Mo in Seneca, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, guys. My thing is, if the Democrat leaders are as much to blame for what happened as is Trump, they condone violence at their rallies.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to be violent and burn down cities at their rallies, but what happened in Washington, D.C. was terrible. Terrible. They started it. Stop all the violence. Make it all illegal. We are Americans. We are smart. We are decent people. Violence shouldn't even be part of it. But the Democrats are as much to blame for what happened because they allow it themselves at their rallies.
Thanks for
Why
the
are we going
all summer long? Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this is I don't want to get into whataboutism, but this is a part of it, and this is part of the faithlessness, and this is part of the reason you saw murder spike 55% in cities like Chicago because of the lawlessness, the turning over the streets to violence. And, so much of the hand-wringing yesterday was, I understand, very difficult to listen to because I don't need a tutorial from cable talking heads about violence being inappropriate. I know that. I was one of the people, like our listeners, saying this for the last 6 months when it came to the rioting on the streets because of as a legitimate way to petition redress from your government, and it's not, right? In America, legitimate protesting stops at civil disobedience. That's the line. But that's a line that was crossed by all those people hand-wringing about Trump and about what happened at the Capitol. And as Mo said appropriately, let's have some consistency here. And by the way, this, you know, way back in August of this year from Andrew Sullivan, never Trumper, you know, I mean, I guess he's center left, but regardless, the trap the Democrats walked right into, if law and order are what this election is about, they will lose it. And he goes on to say, rioting and lawlessness is evil, and any civil authority that permits, condones, or dismisses violence, looting, and mayhem in the streets disqualifies itself from any legitimacy. This comes first. If one party supports everything I believe in but doesn't believe in maintaining law and order all the time and everywhere, I'll back the party that does. In that sense, I'm a one-issue voter, because without order, there is no room for any other issue. Disorder always and everywhere begets more disorder. The minute the authorities appear to permit such violence, it is destined to grow. And if liberals do not defend order, fascists will. And he's talking about Democrat-run cities in America, right? Because that was what everybody was talking about in the summer and fall of last year. So your point is well taken, Mo. Craig in Burr Ridge.
Hey, how you doing this morning? I'm all for storming the castle, finally. It's about time these politicians start fearing the people. These are all billionaires and millionaires. They have no idea what it's like to live a life of an average American who makes $65,000 a year or less. It's a joke what they do to us. You know, here in Illinois alone, Pritzker, oh, you know, we got to help the average people. So let's make your license plate fee $151. It's a bunch of extortion. It's garbage what they do to us. They hate us. They look down on us. It's about time we start taking this crap back from them.
Yeah, I understand your anger. Oh, and yesterday, Dan, it was just 15 more days. Okay, just 15 more days, and then maybe we can ease up and open up small restaurants again for indoor dining.
Tom in Oswego.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I saw this coming years ago. Once President Trump got elected, and he was the disruptor in chief, because he was breaking barriers and exposing people, they don't like it. And I knew that as things went on and we got pushed into a corner more and more, people are going to push back. That's human nature. And as far as, you know, I used to tell my kids that, you know what, if you want to make change, you've got to vote for the person you believe in. I don't believe that anymore. And neither do my kids. That's a sad day. That now even the vote doesn't matter. And that's what's happening. I think people are finally, they've had enough. And unfortunately, this is just the beginning. I fear. And I won't be participating in, you know, storming buildings. But I will certainly encourage peaceful disruption.
Thanks for the call.
Because I think we've all had enough. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it.
Peaceful civil disobedience. Okay.
Or peaceful protest. It doesn't even need to be disobedience, but you can be obedient to the law and peacefully protest as well. The loss, you know, we don't believe in elections anymore. You know, I was thinking about this yesterday, and so when I start to think, sometimes I need help, and so I usually reference C.S. Lewis because he's one of the great thinkers of the last, 100 years at least. And something from Mere Christianity about giving in. He wrote, "You find out the strength of the German army by fighting against it, not by giving in. You find out the strength of a wind by trying to walk against it, not by lying down. That's why bad people, in one sense, know very little about badness. They have lived a sheltered life by always giving in. We never find out the strength of the evil impulse inside us until we try to fight it. That's something to consider about giving in and giving in to these impulses. And the impulse to surrender what you know to be morally correct is a temptation to evil. That's some of the whataboutism. Because we've seen Democrats do something that was wrong, then the ends justify the means, and we should play by those rules. For consideration. Clay and Wheeling.
Good morning, Dan, and good morning, Amy. This is more of a personal question, Dan, but is there a point in your own personal belief where you personally will go out and storm the Capitol?
Dan.
The funny
thing. Because you're not a rally guy, right? I mean, you don't speak at any. You haven't. Well, no, you've spoken at a few rallies.
I've spoken at rallies, sure, yeah. Of course. Will I storm the castle? I think the. If you look at, for example, the American Revolution, it was actually quite an orderly thing. There was a progression to it. And so okay. I would say there's a progression to these things, Clay. Thanks for the call.
Well, would you storm the castle?
Well, no, I haven't lost faith in the Constitution. I haven't lost faith in free and fair elections. I haven't lost faith in the Republic. I haven't lost faith in the ability to put in the fight for what you think is right in a free society. So I haven't lost that faith, and this is why I think the question, what are we supposed to do, is an important one for people who have lost faith, and that's why I'm not dismissing it, even if I think that their immediate answer to what am I supposed to do was to do what some people did yesterday, which was wrong. The underlying question, the underlying cultural problem is a real one, and it deserves some sober attention and discussion. Leo Kelly doesn't strike me as some, wild-eyed, crazy person, but yet he did something that was a bit crazy yesterday. Well, we should try to understand that. And it's, by the way, it's the same thing that we've gone through in discussions about people protesting the police, defunding the police, and the violence that ensued in reactions to police-involved shootings and so forth. I understand, and a lot of the peaceful protesters marred by mobsters and rioters and looters in those instances as well. So let's talk about the state of Black America in that context, which we have spent a lot of time on this show talking about. I understand the frustrations, the exasperations, the desire to give in and engage in scapegoating even when the evidence doesn't support it. So these questions deserve exploration. But I don't know that preemptive strikes is where we should be. I mean, I will defend my life, liberty, and property, but there's a progression to that defense. Lewis on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I don't condone what they did yesterday, but I do understand it, and this is how I understand it. What you saw yesterday was a modern-day Boston Tea Party. The question is, what happened? The question that's still out there and that's on everybody's mind is what happened on that night that all the counting stopped and then it picked back up? That's the question that's still out there. And so with that question, the system failed because the system could have answered this with the Constitution, and with the laws that were out there, and none of them were followed. So when people say, they start pointing the finger, there's a saying. It says,
Is this the casting the first stone?
Is that, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I got you. I got you, Lewis. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Bill in Mewinaga, Wisconsin. Did I pronounce that right?
McQuanago.
Oh,
yeah,
McQuanago.
Dan, get it right. It's
I've never heard of it. Please. Sorry. Apologize.
Most people have, and I hope it stays that way.
Okay.
He stole my thunder with the Tea Party. That's my thought. This is the logical next step. a bunch of people getting so upset that they overreact and do something that shouldn't be done, but it's out of frustration. And where'd they learn it from? They've watched all these protests all year long, and every single time it's been, you know, kind of washed over, peaceful protests. But
yeah,
this one wasn't. And,
yeah,
you know, and the other thing that really bothers me more than anything else is there was an armed person in Kenosha, Wisconsin that fought the police and got shot and became the number one press item of the day. Yet there was an unarmed woman last night that got shot, and because she's a Trump supporter, nobody gives a hoot and she doesn't get any press. And the hypocrisy in that from our press is it's really sad. It is so sad.
Thanks for the call, Bill.
Well, it was a busy news day, and her, I mean, eventually, yeah, they're going to...
Busy.
Well,
no,
busy.
I think he's pointing to the no, it will not be given the same treatment. It absolutely will not, Bill.
Are you kidding me? Really? She's an unarmed woman.
Are you kidding
me? I mean,
she
was African-American.
No, I'm not kidding you.
This would be a big deal. An unarmed person shot by police? By a senior veteran Capitol Police officer?
You think that's going to get the same press coverage as a black individual and a white police officer shooting?
It should. She served our country for 4 years. Did four tours.
Yeah, I think you're missing the point. It should. What will it get?
Okay.
What did Bill say? It will get. That's the point.
Okay.
And he's absolutely right. It's absolutely right. And this is the disorder begetting disorder that C.S. Lewis referenced. And that's where we are. So he's right as well to point to what we've experienced just in the last year, much less the last, you know, couple of generations, the disorder that begets disorder. And it manifests itself in all sorts of ugly ways that some are foreseeable and some are not. Marty in Naperville.
Good morning, folks. I've called many times, Dan. I'm going to tell you this now. I've been to many Trump rallies. Yes, maybe there were some Trump people that went in there after the original storm of the thing. Nobody at Trump rallies dresses like the village people, for starters. Number
yeah,
two, and I'm not trying to be funny,
no,
but number two, they pull everything Trump says off a tweet or anything, yet every single picture and every press thing has this guy dressed like an I don't know what. And I'm not trying to be funny, but all of a sudden they break into the Capitol and they're walking through the ropes orderly. Come on. This was a setup. Try storming the Capitol. Go to Washington sometime and try storming the Capitol doors and see what happens to you. Yes, there may have been more people there, but that should have been accounted for. I just did a lot of hearing things.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Yeah, I mean, the question of the Capitol Police's preparedness for this,
ridiculous,
too, is a legitimate area
of inquiry. Watched a security failure in progress.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and yesterday amid the violence on the Hill and criticized for issuing a statement too late, President Trump offered this video message to supporters that had shown up for the Save America rally.
I know your pain. I know you're hurt. We had an election that was stolen from us. It was a landslide election, and everyone knows it. Especially the other side. But you have to go home now. We have to have peace. We have to have law and order. We have to respect our great people in law and order. We don't want anybody hurt. It's a very tough period of time. There's never been a time like this where such a thing happened, where they could take it away from all of us, from me, from you, from our country. This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special. You've seen what happens. You see the way others are treated that are so bad and so evil. I know how you feel. But go home and go home in peace.
Trey Gowdy, former state, a former rep from South Carolina, of course, described Trump's comments as tepid at best, saying this.
Just what a terrible day it is for America. I never, never thought I would see Americans scaling the wall to attack the people's house, the Capitol. So if you're thinking about moving to a narco state or a banana republic and you wonder what it's like, today was a good idea of what it would be like. That is not America. That is not this idea of America. We're a nation of laws. We're not a nation of people who attack law enforcement officers trying to accomplish a goal that was never going to be accomplished in the first place. Martha, this was always a fool's errand. So why people are surprised that Mike Pence did exactly what the Constitution calls him to do, I'm surprised that they're surprised.
And you know, Lindsey Graham last night, I thought he did a great job because Trump, and by the way, that video was taken down because Twitter's account was shut down for 12 hours until he deletes that and a few other things. And it was yanked off of YouTube and off of Facebook. But Lindsey Graham, there's no voter fraud. And just listen, please just listen to this.
They say there's 66,000 people in Georgia under 18 voted. How many people believe that? I asked, give me 10, and I had one. They said 8,000 felons in prison in Arizona voted. Give me 10, I hadn't gotten one. Does that say there's problems in every election? I don't buy this. Enough's enough. We got to end it. Vice President Pence, what they're asking you to do, you won't do because you can't. Talk about interesting times. I associate myself with Rand Paul. How many times will you hear that?
Although it seems to me that what you have with some of the Lindsey Graham types of the world is a bit of piling on when it's safe to pile on. For more on all of this, we're pleased to be joined again by David Drucker, political reporter for The Washington Examiner. David, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good to be here. Thank you.
You know, in advance of Trump's remarks at the rally, in advance of that video that we played amid the violence, there was a speech that Don Jr. gave at the rally where he said essentially the message to McConnell and the establishmentarians in the Republican Party that the Republican Party isn't your Republican Party anymore. It's Trump's Republican Party. And for those of you who don't support the objections that were being telegraphed at that point when Trump Jr. was speaking yesterday morning, I'll be in your backyard in a couple of months, essentially supporting your opponents, just like Trump said the other day that he would be back in Georgia in a couple of months to support who's ever running against Brian Kemp. I guess that my question is your sense today, whether going forward past January 20th into the 2022 election cycle, which begins in earnest, is this still going to be a Trump's Republican Party after yesterday? Does he still have the kind of sway? Will Kevin McCarthy want to enlist him to help with House races?
Well, I think that's a good question, and we're going to have to wait and see, to be quite honest with you. But I think in the immediate, I think a lot of Republicans in Washington still believe that it's Trump's Republican Party, and they're still worried about primary challenges. And I think we saw that yesterday, because even though in the Senate there were only minimal votes to sustain the objections, in the House there were a majority of House Republicans, I think about 120, 125 of them, somewhere in there, including the numbers one and two ranking House Republicans, Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise, who voted to object when they could to several states. And those objections would overturn the election if sustained in actuality and throw the election to Trump in theory. And so I think they're still very concerned because they have seen the same non-evidence that Lindsey Graham has seen. I know there's a lot of belief. I've talked to voters. I've talked to Republican officials, and I know how people feel about the election. But even in court, the president's lawyers couldn't present any or didn't present any. And so Republicans in the House haven't seen anything different than Republicans in the Senate, but I think that they're up every 2 years. They're closer to the ground, and I think they're still concerned that Trump and his eldest son will show up in their districts and campaign against them, and that even if they don't, grassroots Republicans in their district will punish them nonetheless. And so I don't think we can conclude this morning, despite everything, that it's not Trump's Republican Party. I think what we can say is that for those Republicans that appreciated the president's policies, were concerned about opposing him because they understood where their voters were in relation to the outgoing president, that for many of them, this was a final straw of sorts. Not only is he on his way out, but he is now asking them, in their opinion, was asking them to do things that they simply could not countenance. I mean, you look at Vice President Mike Pence as somebody, and I've interviewed Pence about this. I've talked to people close to Pence. Pence doesn't get enough credit for being a savvy politician. He understood when he signed up with Trump what he was signing up for. But he made a decision for several reasons that he was in. And if he was in, there were things that went along with that, both for policy reasons and political reasons. But when the president asked him to do something unconstitutional and basically unilaterally, as one man, change the outcome of an election where a couple hundred million people voted practically, nearly, he not only could he not stomach it, it wasn't constitutional. There's a last straw for everybody, and I think for many, that last straw was yesterday.
And David, CNN and CBS and NBC are reporting that this morning cabinet members have begun discussions about invoking the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump from office. Do you see that happening? And they're doing it because of yesterday's events, obviously.
Correct. I think that it's a bit of a complicated procedure, and I don't know with less than 2 weeks to go that you actually have enough time to invoke the 25th Amendment and proceed with it. But I do think that the idea that some members of the cabinet, some members of the staff are thinking about it, talking about it, and wondering if it's something they should pursue, I think that part is real. Maybe the president's, statement from this morning that he's now going to, not get in the way of an orderly transition of power will, quell some concerns. But the concerns that led to those, we've for 4 years, right, we've dealt with stories like this that often I think are just sort of rumors run amok. People sort of talk about something and it becomes a thing. I think these discussions, though informal, are real. I just find it logistically unlikely that they could get there in 13 days.
Well, there's something else I find it, which is sort of swamp-like in its expediency. And it's the same thing with the objections yesterday. Whether you believe the objections were proper or not, the idea that those people who said I was, like Kelly Loeffler, for example, or Langford from Oklahoma, I'm going to object because I think the Cruz Third Door Audit Commission is a good idea. Well, now because of what happened on the Hill, we're going to show that the mob doesn't win and we're going to get back to regular business and concluding our business. But now I'm going to change my mind. Well, what changed? If it was a good idea before the mob entered the Capitol, then it's still a good idea after. It's completely about optics. And it's the same thing with this 25th Amendment nonsense, whether you could do it or you couldn't do it. What do you think that would engender? Do you think that would engender a flag waving ticker tape parade for you, members of the Trump cabinet or senators or whoever is among the whispering crowd? Of course it wouldn't. And it would further enrage the Trump base. So this is all sort of pathetic, transparent press release politics as far as I'm concerned. And while I don't appreciate how Trump handled things yesterday, particularly with respect to Pence, the idea that all of these institutionalists with their moral hand-wringing giving us kindergarten lectures about how violence is bad are doing something heroic, I also won't stomach.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that there's a lot of political expediency going on. I actually think you're right. Look, if you actually believe that the presidential election was fraudulent, then it shouldn't really matter what happens from the perspective of protests and civil unrest, if you feel like it's so egregious that you need to try and insert Congress into the role of overturning results or changing results. And I think that what that reveals, number one, is what we like to call in Washington, vote no, hope yes.
Yeah,
I don't think Josh Hawley, or by the way, this is like a disease in Washington, because a lot of the no votes, you know, there's some, I mean, look, I don't want to be too judgy here, right? But there are some real principled politicians on both sides. Their no votes are serious. They really hope the thing sinks. But then there are a lot of no votes on both sides, both parties, that are often, they don't really want the bill to fail. And they know that their no vote won't cause it to fail. And now they can register their principled objection without having to deal with the consequences. You know, it really wasn't clear that Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, although they're very intelligent, principled politicians on many issues, really wanted to delay or change the results of the presidential election. But nonetheless, you know, they went through the motions here on commissions and investigations, despite all of the investigations and court cases that didn't amount to anything. And then on the other hand, I think that there were some Republicans that were legitimately appalled, because they never really thought, they thought Trump was a lot of bluster. And I don't think they really thought at the end of the day that his rhetoric and protests of the election would culminate in actions the way they did yesterday.
But don't you think it was irresponsible, though, of him to string along his followers and say, you know, January 6th is going to be this epic big day, and Biden, the election's going to be tossed out because of Mike Pence?
Yeah, I think it was irresponsible, and I think it was politically misguided. Look, I think the president, if you strip away all of the behavior that bothered people and all of the things he said that bothered people, there are some legitimate accomplishments he can claim. You know, he could be talking about on his way out the door the Abraham Accords or Operation Warp Speed, where the vaccine for the coronavirus was developed in record time. You know, there was a historic tax overhaul. I mean, look, I could go on and on. But, you know, the presidency is about more than legislative and foreign policy accomplishments. It's about your stewardship of the country and how you conduct yourself. The presidency is both about, you know, logistical legislative leadership and moral leadership. And it's about caring for the institutions, because you're just renting them out. And I think that what the president did gave his most ardent supporters, and even some not so ardent, this idea that something could be done on January 6th that could not be done. And he actually called Mike Pence a coward for following the Constitution. And it also went, you know, I've just said this often about Trump. He likes to put on a big show at his rallies, and people, we've seen the response. It's been very much like a movement. But you always have to worry and be mindful that some people might really take you seriously with some of the things you say that to you are colorful hyperbole, that to you are part of the show. You know, as a reporter, I don't like to preen, but when you call, for instance, the media the enemy of the people, I mean, I don't really care, big deal. But if somebody actually believes that I'm the enemy of the people, I mean, there are things that are done to enemies of the people. So when you say that about Democrats, or you say it about Republicans, or you say it about reporters, somebody in the crowd might take you seriously. And I think what we saw yesterday was a whole bunch of people feeling and believing the president, that the election was stolen, that a crime was committed, decided to do what people often do when that happens, and when you're encouraged by somebody of, you know, high stature and respect, or at least in a high position, you go and try and do something about it, or at least register your frustration in ways that, you know, we don't normally do in this country. And I think, you know, that's what happened yesterday. And I think it's unfortunate for the president that he didn't approach his post-election period a lot differently, because I think that his presidency is going to be remembered for this more than anything else, because it is so unusual in American history. I don't see how people go, well, that was just one day out of many.
He is David Drucker, senior political correspondent for The Washington Examiner, WashingtonExaminer.com. Thank you, as always, David.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the the morning, Dan and Amy. This just came over the transom. Mick Mulvaney resigns as President Trump's special envoy, former chief of staff, saying, I called Secretary of State Mike Pompeo last night to let him know that I'm resigning from that post. I can't do it. I can't stay. Those who choose to stay, and I have talked with some of them, are choosing to stay because they're worried the president might put someone worse in. Former Trump chief of staff Mick Mulvaney.
Stephanie Grisham resigned yesterday, as well as the social secretary, Big Wah. But they, you know, she served as the first lady's communications director and chief of staff, and had a
briefly
brief
as the comm director for Trump.
Yeah, never had a press conference either. They said her resignation came in response to the pro-Trump rioters that stormed the Capitol.
What Trump Jr. had to say at the Save America rally yesterday. I mentioned this in our conversation at the end of last hour with David Drucker from the Washington Examiner, but if you missed it, you should hear it because it prompts a question of where people will be. Is Trump Jr. Characterizing something that is true, or is he characterizing something that may or may not be true by the time the 2022 cycle rolls around in earnest?
It should be a message to all the Republicans who have not been willing to actually fight. The people who did nothing to stop this deal. This gathering should send a message to them. This isn't their Republican Party anymore. This is Donald Trump's Republican Party. This is the Republican Party that will put America first. This is the Republican Party that will fight for the American worker. This is the Republican Party that's not just gonna roll over and die because the Democrats would like you to.
Is that what the Republican Party is? Is that whose Republican Party it will be when Trump leaves office on January 20th? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636 DA, turnkey.pro text line.
And what's going to happen if he runs again in 2024 and makes that announcement? I mean, is that the end of the Republican Party? Because you have your Trump Republicans and then your, you know, moderate and or conservative Republicans.
Derek and Wheaton, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, first of all, conservatives are Trump supporters. I want to start out with what happened at the Capitol, storming the Capitol. I have totally disregard for that. That should never happen. Every person that was in that Capitol needs to be identified and arrested.
52 were arrested.
Yeah, so we need to find out through facial
recognition software. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Who some of those people were. And then they need to be arrested and dealt with, okay? 99% of those people were peaceful. But this has been going on all summer. And when you allow this lawlessness to go on, like with BLM and Antifa, you know, eventually it's going to boil over to our side. So that's, you know, very sad that happened. But this isn't about Trump. And even what they were asking Mr. Pence to do, which, sadly, it shouldn't have came down to one man. It shouldn't have came. This should have been dealt with a long time ago. We should have had a forensic audit of those states, because I watched all of those state legislators' hearings, and there were some things that went on. So I just say we should have all those ballots. We should be able to forensically audit an election. You know, so win or lose, then people, all their frustration can be dispersed if you know, like, I don't know what happened to my ballot. It's right here in Illinois because it goes in the computer. So we should be, if there was a forensic audit of these states, because some things happened in these states that were not correct, and everyone knows it. I mean, a truck driver takes ballots from New York to Pennsylvania. I mean, it's all type of crazy things that happen. So, you know, the Republican Party has been cheating, you know, and we know it. They've been cheating. The Democrats have been cheating. The elites have been cheating. Look at the Republicans in Illinois. That's basically what we have with the Lindsey Grahams and the Liz Cheneys all over the country. It's all about the power and the money. Trump, a billionaire, came in there. They can't control him. Yeah, he's out of control sometimes. But, again, it's not about him. It's about the money. And the Republicans wanted him out. All of these state legislators that did not approve all these changes to the laws in their states, that was unconstitutional. So, basically, it just comes down to you can't change the rules without going into the state legislators. So this was a fraudulent election because they did not follow the Constitution. It has nothing to do with Trump. You know, Trump is just one man. The people feel disfranchised because this was not done fairly.
All right.
You know,
thanks
look
for the
what
call.
Happened in Detroit.
Yeah, Derek, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. I think you made your point. Ed in Oak Brook.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not a Trump Republican. I'm a disgusted independent, and I'm just sick of all of them, and I wish this election was fair to say, yeah, Biden was the true winner. And then, you know, you're always are mentioning your legal experts and the guy you just said that it was unconstitutional for Pence. I'm saying, you know what? I would have rejected it if it was me, and I would have let the Supreme Court, because who would have thought that executive orders could not be reversed? The Rogers Court or whatever the guy's name is did it. And then who would have thought that Obamacare would not have been overturned because it's basically a tax, but yet the Roberts Court approved that. So I would have rejected those ballots. I would have threw it at the Supreme Court, and I would have let them decide, because right now the people are so sick. I know I am. I told a lot of what I thought were friends. Well, they weren't friends. They were acquaintances to F off. Because they're laughing at me because, you know, I went down with Trump's ship and all of these people now that are abandoning him. Well, what do you have to say about that? I mean, that is so disgusting. Just your commander loses. You're just going to walk off and leave him on the battlefield alone. That's disgusting in itself. Anyway, have a nice day.
Thanks for the call, Ed. Annette and McHenry.
Yeah, good morning, Dan and Amy.
Morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. This is my first time calling.
Congrats.
Welcome.
I just wanted to say that I don't know that it's Trump's Republican Party. What I know, though, is it would be nice if other Republicans would step up to represent the conservative people on a more or maybe less political basis without worrying about their political careers. Worrying, represententing us and what needs to be done for the good of the country.
Thanks for the call.
Well,
on that.
Ted Cruz and others, you know, six other senators, they tried to overturn the election results. You know, they spoke. But then the chaos happened at, you know, the Capitol. And then when they reconvened, there was not too much discussion. What the House talked about Pennsylvania and the Senate talked about Arizona. And then they voted at 2:41 a.m. this morning.
John in Annapolis.
Yeah, Annapolis, Maryland.
Hey, John.
Hey, Dan, Amy. I was at the protest yesterday, or the rally, or whatever the heck they call it. But, you know, as I was telling your screener, said it was really a large, peaceful crowd, all racial and gender backgrounds. And we got up to the Capitol, and it's just like, it seemed the same. It wasn't until we got around to the Supreme Court side, and even then, people were singing patriotic songs. They were on the steps. And it was near the end that we heard, oh, somebody had been shot. We heard that they had breached the Capitol. And it's like, I'm just telling you, it was a very small minority of people that were involved with anything like that. It, you know, and granted, unfortunately, it's the one bad apple can spoil the whole bunch. But the whole message of the day was, even when President Trump was speaking, he said, I encourage you to go down to the Capitol, march peacefully. He stressed the word peacefully. And, you know, it's just really such a disappointment that, we were surprised people got into the Capitol. We thought people were singing and standing on the steps, and what we saw, they were. But, you know, it's just an unfortunate situation.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, John. Appreciate your first-person perspective. Jeff in Cal City.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. What I just don't understand what people expected. We had an entire year where we were supposed to be locked down, and there were riots. We had cities, hit blocks worth of cities that were taken over for weeks. And the Democrats just elected a senator, a United States senator, who said that Jeremiah Wright's sermon about the chickens coming home to roost was an outstanding sermon. I mean, what do people expect? They encourage this sort of behavior, and now they have some sort of righteous indignation about what just happened? It's ridiculous.
Thanks, Jeff. Joe in Kenosha.
Yeah, you know, as far as the people at the Capitol, I'm not so sure what they did is so wrong anyway. I mean, peace and kumbaya, it gets you nothing. Look at all the people. The left keeps coming at you and coming at you. We do what we do, and nothing happens. We keep getting pushed back further and further and further and cheated and election stolen and things like that. History shows us we need to do something like that.
Well, thanks for the call, Joe. Actually, history shows you generally that violence is a dead end. Mm-hmm. That's what history shows you, which is why the example of Martin Luther King, for just to point out an obvious one, is so important, and what he was able to do through civil disobedience to rectify unjust laws. Even in revolutions where violence is does not have a legitimate basis, often end in tyranny. Think of the French Revolution. The storming of the Bastille did not produce what the stormtroopers wanted it to,
right.
Did it? As I said earlier in the show, borrowing from Andrew Sullivan, disorder begets disorder. So what happened yesterday on the Hill with that small cohort of Trump supporters and probably Antifa infiltrators as well, clearly some Antifa infiltrators, I should say, that's not the way. It's not the way.
And 52 people were arrested, 52. 14 police officers injured, but of those 52, we will hopefully find out, you know, what their motivations were and who they exactly are.
Yeah, and the police officer thing is an important point here to punctuate, which is to say we respect men and women in uniform. We talked about that all summer, too, that what do you think you're going to accomplish by, you know, pushing a barricade into Capitol police officers, throwing punches,
or tear gassing them.
Chasing a Capitol Hill police officer up the steps, and he's got to sort of defend himself with a stick before he gets reinforcements. What do you think that's going to accomplish? That's not right.
I mean, four people died yesterday. One was shot. She was unarmed, but the other three had medical conditions. But no one had to die. This is it's awful. It makes me sick. I couldn't even sleep last night.
And I know people don't need lectures, including from a lot of like the Fox News hosts, too. Everybody wants to, you know, be the most self-righteous when it comes to decrying violence as if that's some sort of courageous position. It's the obvious position. It's the obvious position. And people know it. Even people, like we heard from earlier in the show, who were part of those who breached the Capitol. They know it. And then it's about explaining where this comes from. And that's an important discussion. Because it needs to be addressed so that there's constructive outlets for frustration that don't include it, that necessarily don't include violence. And that's the real conversation. That's the room temperature conversation we should be having once we get past all of the one-dimensional TV hosts and cardboard cutout politicians doing their pro forma exercises in moral righteousness about violence as if they've just invented this idea that violence is inappropriate. It's frustrating. Maurice and Berwyn.
Dan, Amy, I think it's a return to the center for everyone. I don't want the progressives in the Democratic Party. We can get rid of the AOC. You guys can get rid of these far, white Proud Boys and just return to a world of checks and balances. That was horrible yesterday. I feel horrible about that. I'm a Democrat. I'm a conservative Democrat, but I feel terrible. When I heard the guy on Fox News talk about they were breaking up arms of the chairs and ways to defend themselves, that was a horrible display for you guys. I mean, I didn't vote for Trump, but Jesus Christ, his legacy is pretty tarnished. After the day, I listened to Amy one day, and she talked about vaccinations, and so my co-worker called in and said, Amy, you're getting the mark of the beast. I'm like, Jesus Christ, the crazy train. what's going on? I think we all need to take a moment to pause and figure out how to be returned to some kind of level of moderation here. So I want to get us all back to the middle.
All right. Thanks for the call, Maurice. Appreciate it. You know, something else, too, about the mob. I mean, yesterday was a Shakespearean tragedy, really, come to life, particularly with the death of that Air Force veteran. I mean, this is what happens. I mean, think of Julius Caesar. I'm sure there's some Shakespearean buffs out there like myself. All right. When the mob comes for Cena.
Yeah.
And Cena, they're looking, and Cena, the poet, says, "I'm not the Cena you're looking for," and they kill him anyway. They know what they're doing, but they're so whipped into frenzy over finding Caesar's assassins that they don't care. It's indiscriminate. And so I know the report is that it was a Capitol Hill police officer that shot and killed that Air Force veteran,
Ashley Babbitt.
But in the fog of chaos, right?
Yeah.
You essentially turn on your brethren.
Right.
Or you expose your brethren to something like that. That's not defensible. People know this.
She was unarmed trying to
People know this.
Break through a door. I know.
They don't have to come over the top. It's just like, let's talk this through a little bit. Let's explain this so we get back to, frankly, what Maurice was saying. Like, we have both feet planted firmly on the ground again, and we think smartly and talk prospectively about problem solving.
And I loved what Congressman Mullen from Oklahoma said about her. You know, we need to pray for her because her family is hurting right now, and that did not have to happen. That everyone seemed to kind of lose their mind for a little bit yesterday.
Grant in Rockford.
Good morning, you two. Hey, I just want to say, Dan, you know this election was stolen. You know it in your heart. I don't care what the little sewer creature courts say. You know it. What are we supposed to do? And then I understand it was awful yesterday. So were all the other riots this summer. But the news media, I'm at my wit's end. Have you read the People's Republic series by Schlichter?
No.
You should, because that's where we're headed. We're going to split. And I don't think we should give up one inch of ground to these animals. But they stole it, Dan. They stole it. And what are we supposed to do? Bend over and say, hit me again? I can't take it, man. This is what makes rational people do irrational things. When you're lied to your face and you're told to just take it with a grin. And have a good day, guys.
All right, Grant. Mm-hmm. Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I always hear the politicians talking how we got to unite everybody, get this country together again. And my shop, all these people that work for me and my customers, we all talk about it.
Rick?
And if they can prove... Pardon me?
Sorry, we lost you for a second there. Yeah, you were talking about in your shop, you all talk about it.
Well, we're all Trump supporters and my customers, and we all say the same thing. Do a forensic audit of the election, because we believe it was fraudulent, too. And if they can prove, look, Biden did win and is legitimate, everybody to the man says, I accept it, I don't like it, but I will accept it. And that's what all they got to do. But they won't do that, so I think that there is something up. And then as far as what happened yesterday, I was listening to Steve Cortez, and they were saying, and the guest he had, I think Buck Sexton, were saying the left is going to use this to curtail more civil rights. And I'm like, that is the dumbest thing you can do. That's just going to make things worse. I mean, don't they understand that the country is a powder keg right now? And they got to back off and maybe start doing the work for the country, for everybody, and not destroy the country, because that's just making things worse by curtailing more civil rights.
All right. Thanks for the call, Rick.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Just while you're hearing from all the politicians on cable news and in print online about how they're opposed to violence, and specifically that Trump is the source of all things that are wrong in this country and the source of the instigation of violence in this country. Just a little bit of a rewind back to, you know, all the way back to August of last year, This is Ayanna Pressley, Frances Parker Spice, one of AOC and the squad's members. This is Ayanna Pressley on MSNBC explaining the rioting that was going on the streets of America.
I'm looking to the public. You know, this is as much about public outcry and organizing and mobilizing and applying pressure so that this GOP-led Senate and that these governors that continue to carry water for this administration, putting the American peoples in harm's way, turning a deaf ear to the needs of our families and our communities, hold them accountable.
Well,
make the phone call, send the email, show up. You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there is unrest in our lives. And unfortunately, there's plenty to go around.
There needs to be unrest on the streets for as long as there is unrest in our lives. Was that a call to unity? Was that a call to cooler heads?
That was a call to attack police. I mean, think about it. Outside the Columbus statue that day, 89 Chicago police officers were injured. 89. Remember, they were throwing rocks at them, and all of that was motivated by politicians like Pressley.
This is just an example of one of the pronouncements that was made over the many months as looting was redefined into symbolic taking by none other than the Pulitzer Prize-winning 1619 Project founder, Nicole Hannah-Jones. Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner, in response to rioting in Philadelphia, policing and prosecution are both systemically racist, quote unquote. And then all we're hearing is about how people have lost faith in our institutions. And why is that? It's all because of Trump. Is that right? Defund police. Everything is systemically racist in America. All the institutions are because America is systemically racist. And that doesn't undermine the credibility of those institutions in the minds of the body politic. And so when Trump departs on January 20th, all of what has transpired up until this point will just evaporate into the ether, and the sun will shine, and Americans will have confidence again in all of their organizing institutions, civic, cultural, governmental. Is that right? Polling right now has 45% of independents, Dan Henninger reporting in the Wall Street Journal, part of his column. 45% of independents have lost faith in our electoral system.
It's a pretty high number.
For more on all this, we're pleased to be joined again by our friend John Hinderaker. He is the president of the Center for the American Experiment, founder of PowerlineBlog.com, and a frequent guest and co-host for me on my other show, which I always appreciate. John, thanks for guest host, I should say. Thanks for joining us again, John. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning.
So what about this, rallying around the integrity of our institutions, the protection of our institutions by, ironically, guardians of those institutions based on their positions who have lost much of their legitimacy well before yesterday afternoon?
So liberals are opposed to rioting now. I'm glad to see that, you know, just like that. And the quotes that you read, you know, were typical of many that we've heard from liberals. You think about the day when Trump was inaugurated. There was a worse riot, much worse riot that day than we saw yesterday. And, of course, the last time somebody tried to break down the door to the Senate chamber, it was during the Kavanaugh hearing. Remember that, when some Democrats were trying to break in? So, you know, you could go on and on. How about James Hodgkinson? You know, we're still waiting for a conservative equivalent of James Hodgkinson. So you know, the hypocrisy is so thick you can cut it with a knife.
Yeah, but John, do you think Trump's rhetoric at that rally that, you know, sent the mob to the Capitol?
Well, I think that, you know, look, I mean, I've been critical of what Trump has been doing in the last few weeks. Not so much because it was inciting violence, although I did question. He said, though, you know, my supporters are coming to D.C. and they won't stand for the election being stolen. And I question, what does that mean? They won't stand for it. You know, they're going to battle with the police. They're going to start a revolution. You know, what are you talking about? And I think that kind of talk can be faulted in exactly the same way that kind of speech on the left could be faulted. But I've been more broadly critical of Trump in recent weeks because of the way that he has really held out a false hope. And he's not the only one. A number of people on the right have been doing this, that the result of the election was going to be overturned and that somehow there was going to be a vote in Congress, you know, to refuse to accept the vote of the Electoral College and so forth. You know, that was never in the cards. If you want to prevent voter fraud, you really have to do it before the election. You know, there's no way in 60 days between election and inauguration that you can conduct some kind of a legal proceeding in one state, let alone five or six states, that's going to result in a factual finding that the apparent loser of the race actually won it, and have that affirmed by the relevant appellate court. I mean, there was never time for that to happen. It was never in the cards that could happen. And I think it's quite likely that Trump is right, and that if you only count legal votes and every legal voter only votes once, it may well be true that Trump should have won the election. We may never know that because the problem with the lex, well, one of the many problems with the lax standards for mail-in voting and dropping ballots into boxes and so forth that the Democrats established for this election, one of the problems is that the same laxness that enables voter fraud in the first place can make it impossible to prove after the fact.
But there were procedural opportunities, and both in courts of law, but with state legislatures in particular, there was the opportunity, and again, this is up to the state legislatures, and they all demurred, but to say to the Pennsylvania State Legislature, how can you let the Pennsylvania Supreme Court usurp your authority and rewrite the election law in the state of Pennsylvania? Wisconsin State Legislature, how can you let an administrative agency redefine indefinitely indisposed so that hundreds of thousands of cheeseheads get to vote without the voter ID requirement? I mean, so there are these, I just wanted to restate there, because we talked about it over the last 8 weeks, there are these accountability mechanisms, and you have to pursue them, but you have to sort of pursue them with sort of what you're describing, the sense of what is possible and where you can make your best arguments most effectively and most consistently to bring people in the public arena along with the fights you're having in with state legislatures or in the courts of law.
Well, I think that's right. And the same thing happened in Minnesota, where I live, by the way. There was a change in mail-in voting procedures to eliminate the witness signature requirement. That happened in, I think, 10 or 15 states, and it was the result of a collusive lawsuit between the Democratic Party and the Democratic Secretary of State that eliminated the only safeguard we had, inadequate though it was, to protect the integrity of mail-in voting. So that kind of thing did happen across the country, and there's a good reason why many people, as you point out, in the polls say they are skeptical that this election was conducted fairly. And frankly, Dan, that's something that Joe Biden and the Democrats are going to have to live with for the next 4 years. You know, I think that skepticism is likely to grow. I think over the next year or two, people are going to be investigating and researching and writing books, arguing one way or the other, either that the election was stolen or that the election was not stolen. What I would say is that the Democrats definitely tried to steal the election. And whether in hindsight they needed to do that, we still don't know. In other words, they might have won the election honestly anyway. But they certainly went out of their way to undermine the integrity of that election in many states across the country. And they're going to have to live with the consequences.
Well, even in the Georgia runoff election, I mean, it wasn't election day. It was election month. The people had a month to go and vote. And with more time, I think there's more vulnerabilities to the system.
Well, there's all kinds of things, Amy. I mean, Georgia is a state where the Republican Secretary of State, for reasons that nobody can explain, agreed under pressure from Stacey Abrams to setting up unattended boxes, but only in heavily Democratic areas, not in Republican areas, just in Democratic areas. Unattended boxes where anybody could walk by and drop in ballots, any number of ballots. Who knows, you know? And that's not, I mean, everybody knows, everybody understands that that is not how you conduct an election if you want it to be honest.
Mitch McConnell, in his speech yesterday before the mob assault on the Capitol, responding to the objection that was raised against the Arizona electors, talked about sort of the double standard, and we don't want to succumb to the double standard. And as much criticism as McConnell has received, he did point out the hypocrisy of the left, which was useful, talking about the objections that Democrats leveled in 2000 and after the 2000 election, after the 2004 election, after the 2016 election, including being cheered on by the likes of Durbin and others in the Senate, in his, you know, in the body in which he resides. So that was useful. And he basically suggested that we rightly decried those fallacious objections. And so we need to have the same position now that we did then. So that's a fair enough argument to make, whether you agree with it or disagree with. But I think the larger problem that McConnell and Republicans will have going forward in the minority is the belief that they are willing to be principled across the board, number one. In other words, willing to hold themselves to the standard that they set across every issue, not just when it comes to, for example, certifying a foregone conclusion in a presidential election. And number two, that they're willing to take the fight to the Democrats to hold them accountable for not subscribing to the principles that they apply to Republicans or not subscribing to the black letter of the law. And that's what Republicans have been seemingly unwilling to do in so many instances, thus the lack of legitimacy, thus the entrance of Trump.
Well, we'll see, Dan. I mean, I think you make a good point. You know, before Trump was even inaugurated in 2017, the Democrats were already talking about resisting, right? The hashtag was resist. And I've written on a power line, I plan to resist Joe Biden and his administration every day for the next 4 years. And I'm pretty confident that McConnell, in his unaccustomed role as set up minority leader, is going to resist. I certainly hope so. And I think we'll see, you know, I think we'll see how effectively Republicans in Washington try to hold the Democrats accountable.
He is John Hinderaker, president of the Center for the American Experiment, founder of PowerlineBlog.com. John, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Dan. Bye-bye.
Bye, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We welcome the Atlantic to the party of actually asking questions about COVID policies. Annie Lowry writing in the Atlantic, and we spent a lot of time talking about young people, kids in school, mm-hmm. younger people in the workforce, people of working age, whether they're on the employee side or the employer side, and the policies related there. Well, what about protecting those that we know, or the evidence being overwhelming, the exponential difference in mortality rates between the young and the old? So what about protecting the old? That's what Annie Lowry writes about in the Atlantic. As the country plunged into a deep and unusual economic recession last year, it also plunged into a deep and unusual social recession. Social recession. Atomizing families and friends, evaporating hours of laughter and care and touch. This phenomenon hit nobody as hard as America's seniors, who are much more likely than their younger counterparts to live in care facilities, many of whom have struggled to connect in a socially distanced or virtual fashion. She talks about how, per a study, how much the presence of human contact has declined among seniors in these facilities, this being particularly important. Survey conducted by Alterum a nonprofit healthcare research and consulting group, finds just 5% of residents and care facilities said they had visitors three times a week, compared with more than 50% before the virus hit. Nearly all said they did not leave their care facility for a meal or go shopping, compared with 40% before COVID. Only one in four was going outside for fresh air. Half said they no longer had access to activities such as art classes or group exercise. Nearly 90% said they could no longer eat meals in the dining room. Two in three, two-thirds, said they no longer left their rooms to socialize with their peers.
So they're dying of loneliness.
A professor of healthcare policy at Harvard Medical School. When we look back on this in the years to come, I imagine there's going to be a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking around whether it was a good idea to blockade older adults in their nursing home rooms for 8, 9, 10 months out of the year without letting them have access to their families. I think we're going to look back and say, what the hell were we doing? What we were doing was failing to save seniors' lives or maintain their livelihoods. Well, that's quite an indictment, isn't it? And by the way, some of us have been asking, what the hell are we doing from the outset across a range of COVID-related policies? And we will continue to, which leads us to our next guest. Pleased to be joined by Dr. Eric Fiegel-Ding, who is an award-winning Harvard-trained epidemiologist and public health scientist. Dr. Fiegel-Ding, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Hope everyone's well.
Dr. Grabowski from Harvard Medical said about policies related to isolating seniors?
Yeah, I think that we really ignored a lot of the welfare of seniors. I agree there's a lot of loneliness. There's a lot of these other issues besides the pandemic that we have to look into, because our healthcare system is just so neglected in so many different ways. And our mental health care is actually one of the worst mental health care systems in the entire world. So I think there will be a lot of things we have to look back on of, you know, we really screwed up in so many different ways for our seniors, for our children, how we basically prioritize bars and before schools, and now have hurt our next generation for decades to come.
And we here in Cook County, we've had 16 suicides, but 5 COVID deaths, and those COVID deaths, all 5 of them had severe comorbidities. How can we convince our politicians? What do you think we could do to convince them to reopen our schools, to make it mandatory?
So I think schools are really important. And of all the things to close, I think schools should be last to close. But at the same time, we can't just reopen, willy-nilly, because schools are an infectious location. And we know that from studies. But I think to reopen, there are ways. We need really good upgrades in our air quality in our schools. We need HEPA filters in every classroom.
Got that now, yeah.
I know, it's very tricky in terms of affordability on that. We need state and federal assistance for that. We need ventilations. We need a lot of different things in addition to just simply wear a mask and have some distance, because that's technically not enough in a lot of crowded rooms with poor ventilation. And I feel like we're completely ignoring this aspect of, yes, schools need to open as much as we can. And, you know, we can sometimes give a little leeway for schools. But at the same time, we're not doing what we need to. And the new virus strain, the B.1.17 variant, is so much more infectious that we've lost almost any wiggle room we had previously to keep schools open. And so this is why we're in a real world of hurt right now.
Well, I want to get to the mutation in a second. But with respect to schools, there's a November 2020 study that was published in JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association, that's findings were thus. The analytical model found missed instruction during 2020 could be associated with an estimated 5.53 million years of lost life. This loss in life expectancy was likely to be greater than would have been observed if leaving primary schools open had led to an expansion of the first wave pandemic. Meaning, these findings suggest that the decision to close U.S. public primary schools in the early months of 2020 may be associated with a decrease in life expectancy for U.S. children. So that study seems to suggest actually the schools should have never been closed in the first place, and they shouldn't be closed now. And yeah, if you want to upgrade in real time as we go on and we learn things, well, that's all well and good. But the net position is schools should stay open, and they should have stayed open from the outset.
Yeah, so there have been many studies on schools, and that is just one of the studies. There's, I would say, a dozen other studies on the infectious and transmissions during school. Schools, we do know, add anywhere from 0.12 to 0.2 to 0.3 in the R value, which is quite significant in many ways. It's now the issue with primary schools. I think primary schools, the common virus and the one, especially in the spring, was shown that, you know, kids are less susceptible in the primary school. Kids are less susceptible than adults, but that's not for true for teenagers. But the problem is with the new variant, which we know we'll talk more, it's that may no longer be the case anymore. But that said, kids do transmit the virus more. They're less susceptible if you expose, but they do transmit it more and transmit it faster because of their exposure and transmission. There's three different things.
Transmit it more where, in what circumstance, in what environment?
So for a virus, there's three aspects. There is how easily someone transmits it, gives it to someone else, how easily someone gets it if you're exposed, and how much exposure someone has. For example, a kid running around in school has a lot of exposure, while someone in a nursing home does not have much exposure. So there's these three dimensions, and kids are less susceptible, true, especially the younger kids. Teenagers, not so. The younger kids are less susceptible, but they're more they have more transmission exposure. We know that they bring it to families and build a most common.
Well, do we know that? I mean, again. I know there's competing studies all over the place, but
see, this came from the UK SAGE group. Kids are anywhere from 2 to 7 times more likely to be the first to have it in a family. They're basically transmitting it more, 2x more transmission. That said, if you give it to them, they're about half as likely to get it.
But in terms of them being facilitators of transmission, how do you explain the Yale research study that surveyed 57,000 child care providers across all 50 states in this country last year and found that there was no difference between the spread in those child care facilities that stayed open versus those that did not among, children to adults. So how do you explain that?
Child care facilities are usually daycares, right? And they're the extremely, extremely young kids. And again, what I'm saying is that in the spring, it was the strain that we had in the spring is also much less infectious than we have today and much less infectious than the new variant. We're on the 2.0 variant, technically. The common one that's currently around is a 2.0 version.
Is there enough data on these new mutations to make those sort of conclusions about transmissibility?
So the numbers I said about 2X actually comes from the UK's official, it's the equivalent of their CDC recommendations. SAGE is the leading UK scientific public health body on this coronavirus. It's like their coronavirus task force. So this is the leading body of the UK government that said this.
And do we know anything about the lethality of that mutation? Do we know anything about the incidence?
The new mutation So the new mutation is not more lethal, but it's more infectious. But in certain ways, that's actually worse, because a virus that's more infectious will actually infect more and actually increase the total pool of people from which people get sick. Right?
Well,
and in certain ways, that's actually worse than the virus. It's more lethal but less infectious, because that's a virus that slows down and ends quicker.
Well, can this London variant be stopped with the vaccine that we're using right now?
So the B.1.17 variant from the UK can. We believe it can.
Okay. Well, that's good news.
We don't think it has vaccine escape potential. But the new South Africa variant, that one is actually much harder to say, because we've actually seen vaccine escape anywhere from 3 to 5% for some of the mutations in that one, in some of the preliminary studies on how they basically escaped antibodies from people who recovered. So that's the problem. Like, the new infectious one is not escaping the vaccine, but the South African one might be, but that one is less circulating. So there's two really bad ones circulating right now. And this is why it's so hard for people to keep up with this, because research that happened in this early spring may not apply anymore, because the infectiousness of the new virus is completely different. And some people say that the new B.1.17 strain from the UK is actually infects kids more than the previous strain. And that's the real concern. We've lost all the wiggle room that we previously had.
But do we know that for sure?
We are pretty confident. So this new virus for sure is more infectious. Now, so that increases infectiousness in everyone. Now, the issue is it like increasing across the board, or is it increasing across the board, but especially in children? Right now, that's the only remaining debate. We know for sure that the new virus adds anywhere from 40 to 80% to the infectiousness, as basically an R of 0.3 to 0.7, which is really, really high. Remember, you have to keep R under 1, and basically if any wiggle room under 1 has now been almost completely taken up and eaten up by the new infectiousness of the new strain. This is why people are really in a panic, and the UK groups are saying that we've lost control of the pandemic, and Denmark CDC, one of the leading SSI CDCs of the world, they said, if we don't control it now, including closing schools, we may not be able to control it at all in February and March, when the new virus has dominated the world. That's their real concern. And so my point is, we could have a little wiggle room to keep schools open by giving, you know, closing other things, but keeping schools open and still staying under 1. You know, R under 1 will basically mean we have it contained. But we've lost that potential now because of the new infectiousness. And that's a grave concern that every scientist and government leader now has.
He is Dr. Eric Fiegel-Ding, award-winning Harvard-trained epidemiologist and public health scientist. Dr. Fiegel-Ding, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Stay safe.
Thanks. Stay sane. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Just a comment on our conversation with Dr. Fiegel-Ding about all things related to COVID. Didn't have enough time to push back, and I'm not going to pillory him in absentia. We'll get him back on the show. But I'm not buying everything that he was putting down about this new strain or about policies related to it. And I just want to point people to a new working paper out by the National Bureau of Economic Research that looks at the long-term potential for excess deaths because of unemployment, as we have another 800,000 Americans file for first-time unemployment benefits announced today. These researchers from Duke, Harvard, looked at this issue of unemployment and its direct correlation to excess deaths. The bulk of excess deaths do not occur suddenly, but years in the future, and they don't return to normal for up to 20 years down the line. So it's important to, again, look at trade-offs, which we've been emphasizing on this show, lives versus lives, when it comes to COVID-19 policy making. And there's a lot more to talk about, and we will be talking about in the days and weeks to come.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and the institutional reactions to what transpired yesterday at the Capitol. Big tech has a lot to say. Of course, the focus has been on suspending Trump's Twitter and Facebook accounts.
And being yanked off of YouTube.
But did you catch this from Facebook? Facebook announced it would be stripping all photos and videos featuring Wednesday's riots at the U.S. Capitol, claiming such content promoted criminal activity.
Oh, wait, did they do that for all the Black Lives Matter riots during the summer? No.
I don't believe so.
No.
That's disturbing.
You're just going to erase history?
It's disturbing on multiple levels. It's disturbing, I mean, the hypocrisy piece of it. It's also disturbing the idea that watching protests, watching people committing illegal acts, then encourages other people to commit illegal acts because, you know, people have no agency, no mind of their own. They just mimic whatever activity they see on the internet, which is absurd. And number three, in terms of what is disturbing about this, we should absolutely see what happened. It's part of our history now.
Right.
And we should have discussions about it and take away lessons from it. Like, for example, taking selfies in Nancy Pelosi's chair, it does not make you an American revolutionary. And also, like some of the individuals who breached the Capitol and were running amok, were Antifa infiltrators. We don't want to understand what happened. We're just going to take the official narrative of what happened and then eliminate any evidence that would provide a more textured and robust dialogue about it.
I mean, that's
troubling.
Right. I mean, are they afraid of a repeat performance or something? That this isn't going to encourage more of that?
Well, that's explicitly what they said.
Yeah.
Also, this that was underreported, two pipe bombs detonated in controlled explosion at the Republican National Committee's D.C. headquarters. A party official who was not authorized to go on the record confirmed to TheFederalist.com the bombs were located in the back of the RNC's building while most of the party leadership was away in Florida for its annual meeting. But nonetheless, so again, perhaps more indicia that there were more than just Trump supporters present in D.C. on the mall around town yesterday. For more on all this, we're pleased to be joined again by Scott McKay. He was the editor at the editor at the Hayride and contributor to the American Spectator. Scott, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What about this? Starting with sort of the big tech response, because this is going to be something that continues to be at least hotly debated, where it's allowed to be debated in the Biden years.
Well, I think you kind of stole my thunder on two different things. Number one, the more pictures that circulate on social media, the more obvious it's going to be that infiltrators get identified. And that blows up the narrative that, you know, these were the mouth-breathing MAGA nuts that Trump has cultivated that, you know, are a menace to society and so on and so forth. I mean, if it's proven that, well, okay, the first people through the breach here were actually Black Lives Matter, Antifa people, that have been in Portland and Seattle and all these other places, that narrative completely falls away and, you know, becomes counterproductive. So you can't have, you know, pictures of all these people circulating, you know, for that. The second thing is, I don't think they want ordinary Americans to see how many people were actually in Washington yesterday.
Hmm.
You know, I don't think they want, I mean, because I'm already looking at headlines, you know, for all these various things, like, well, it was a sparse crowd, and then it turned into a riot.
you know, which is an abject lie. And the more pictures get out of what that event actually was, you know, the easier it is to promulgate that lie. So I think that, you know, those are the two main reasons for this. But at the end of the day, you know, Facebook and Twitter are propaganda organs. That's what they are. They, I mean, they started out as social media platforms, and they have 100% transformed themselves into, you know, partisan propaganda organs that, you know, are there to promote a narrative, you know, friendly to the Democrat Party and others. And, you know, and they're going to do what it takes to fulfill that mission at this point. You know, and the answer is just to get off and you know, deny them, you know, that possibility. I mean, it's Parler and MeWe and whatever other, you know, social media services are out there. You know, that's where conservatives need to go, and they need to get off Facebook and Twitter.
What about the case of Ashley Babbitt, the 14-year, you know, Air Force veteran, served four tours, who, you know, her murder has been seen, and I'm guilty of it too, because I tweeted out because she was trying to break into a door, a window pane of a door, and was shot. But a lot of people saw it, even on MSNBC, when they were wheeling her out of the Capitol, and you can't unsee something like that.
Well, I mean, the way I look at it is, I don't want to reduce her to a test case, but, I mean, okay, what did we have? We had George Floyd, we had Alton Sterling, we had Breonna Taylor, we've had Michael Brown, and now you have Ashley Babbitt, right? Mm-hmm. And what this is ultimately going to come down to in some quarters, and Mike, you know, just because of the nature of the people involved, it won't become as big a thing. But, you know, the real question is, you know, do Q lives matter now? Because, you know, supposedly she was a big, you know, QAnon person, and she goes to the Capitol. She's doing something she probably shouldn't have done. But does she deserve to die for it? Well, you know, that was the question that we kept hearing in the, you know, Michael Brown, Alton Sterling, George Floyd, you know, things where the cops killed somebody. It's not worth murdering somebody over. Like, okay, so this is somebody that was unarmed, that was simply in the U.S. Capitol with all kinds of other folks. She gets shot in the neck and killed in front of everybody. And we're not supposed to have, you know, anything whatsoever to say about that. I mean, I don't support what happened at the Capitol. I think it was a trap that Trump and his supporters fell into, and I think the left is absolutely overjoyed about everything that happened yesterday. But the double standard that's going to show up where Ashley Babbitt is concerned is stark. I mean, it is really, really stark. And nobody in the mainstream media is even going to remember her name by tomorrow. And that should tell you something.
Right. And again, she was in a place she shouldn't have been, as were a bunch of other people. But
you got arrested for that.
No, I understand. That's where I was going. And the reporting is that she was shot by a Capitol Police officer. But we don't know the details of that. And an enterprising reporter, an enterprising press corps, may want to find out the details of that, the way that we pour over the details and have to pour over them again and again because of so much misinformation about things that police-involved shootings that happened 5, 6, 10 years ago.
Right. That's exactly right.
Well, the other thing, too, and just in terms of what you said about the left being overjoyed about this, I mean, some of the reaction, again, here to her death on those platforms you say we need to get off of, Twitter and Facebook. I mean, I'm reading one from a former Jeopardy contestant who just says that one of the few good things that happened as a result of the Capitol protest, in quotation marks, is that Ashley Babbitt is feeding the worms and so on and so forth.
Oh,
and we see this, and again, that's not isolated, and we see a lot of nonsense and ugliness and hatefulness on these platforms in every which direction. But it speaks to the folly of suggesting that if politicians just make strong statements against violence and hate, that we're going to unify the country. And the people who are the most morally indignant are the ones that are the best uniters, no matter how hypocritical or disingenuous they are. And I'm sort of sick of being in that cycle that includes a lot of erstwhile conservative pundits on Fox and elsewhere, too, that are feeding us this line of bull jive.
Well, I mean, you know, the one that entertains me the most is Eric Erickson, who blasted out to his email list yesterday morning following the, you know, twin debacle Senate races in Georgia, you know, saying, oh, we've got to get the Republican establishment and the MAGA people have got to come together because we're going to lose the country, blah, blah, blah. By the afternoon, he was tweeting, shoot the protesters, and ended up getting himself bounced off of Twitter. And it's like, okay, you might not be the guy that can unify the conservative movement anymore, Eric.
Right.
You know, but yeah, look, I mean, when Luke Letlow died of COVID, okay, and yeah. I mean, if there's ever a situation where you should be, regardless of your politics, you should be sympathetic to, you know, a 41-year-old guy who had no reason to think he could die of this and leaves a wife with a 10-month-old and a 3-year-old. You know, like, now is the time to put politics aside. Oh, no, he deserved it because he went around campaigning without a mask on. OK,
well,
like,
see,
that
see,
literally was what was all over Twitter when Letlow died.
See, this is the key point, and that's a great example of it that of course the politicians don't want to address because they've got the intellectual depth of a cookie tray. But the point here is the sentimental barbarism that has taken over our culture, where you think that somebody else's death is the occasion for you to preen about some political position you're taking. I mean, that is sort of quintessential sentimentality, which is a synonym for barbarism. And that's really where we're at. And yesterday was in part an example of that.
No, I would say that. I would maybe go a little bit, you know, afield here. And I'd say, think about how irritated those people get when you say all lives matter. Right. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just apply to the Black Lives Matter thing. When you say all lives matter, it means that, you know, Luke Letlow's life matters and Ashley Babbitt's life matter. And to those people, they don't. They want to be rid of the Luke Letlows and Ashley Babbitts. I mean, that's the real issue here. And I think you're going to see that play out more and more and more as, you know, things get worse, which they will. I mean, you saw it in the Senate when they got back in after the disturbances were done. And I mean, you know, the Chris Coonses and Liz Warrens of the world let loose. And I mean, there was no limiting principle to the invective that those people could throw out. They blamed the Republicans for everything bad in the world when they got back out there. Called them traitors and worse. And, and then they preach about unity, and it's like, are you kidding me? You're on C-SPAN. What are we doing here? They're trying to stoke this. They want to stoke it. They want to, you know, demonize the people that disagree with them so that they have license to do the things that they've always wanted to do, which is to turn this country into an authoritarian, you know, paradise for the ruling class. And, I mean, it's at this point, you can't even deny it. I mean, you can see it. And that's why, I mean, you know, you mentioned the Antifa people and, you know, the question of, you know, whether this was all an agent provocateur thing. You know, I think you start there because you got to look at who benefits from this. And those are the people who benefited from it.
He is Scott McKay, editor at The Hayride, contributor to The American Spectator as well. Scott, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, let's take a call or two to close the show today. Margaret in Edgewater Beach here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How are you today?
Morning.
Good.
Good morning. There's an conservative alternative for Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram is called Clout.
Hub, CLOUTHUT Hub, H-U-B Hub. And all the platforms are on there. Just want to inform you of that, okay? Thank you for all you do. Bye-bye.
Thanks Margaret.
Thanks, Margaret. Appreciate it. Terry in Rogers Park.
Hey, one nonviolent way to get payback at those that try to destroy our president is to boycott CBS, NBC, and ABC and the products they advertise, and also boycott investment and travel to blue states, especially Georgia.
All right. Thanks for the call, Terry.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.